So I will talk about the spontaneously dimerized phases, but I guess idea is to give a kind of an overview of the project that, I mean, or set of projects that we've been doing in collaboration with Leon Balintz, and it's, we believe, offers us a new approach to at least some of the phases which are usually pretty difficult to get in frustrated magnets, and I'll explain exactly what I mean as we go on. And so I plan to start by giving overview of models and sketch of the derivation, and then key technical points that are involved. And then by the end, if time permits, I will try to show a few of slides which I'm not able to reproduce on the board by myself since they're color-coded, just to show that very recently it's a work in progress right now, where we believe we can make a direct comparison with experimental data. But that will come by the end of the talk. And so, the title, Spontaneous Dimer Order in Frustrated Magnets, spatially another topic. And so models we consider have, well, obviously, special anisotropy, and reason for that is to use one-dimensional spin chains as a starting point, and type of the models that we can analyze in this way. So I'll draw a few representative of them. So we, probably many of you are familiar with so-called J1, J2 model in two dimensions. That's Heisenberg antiferromagnet on, say, square lattice. And J1, J2 antiferromagnet. Okay, and in this model, so spins sit on vertices of square lattice, and interaction between nearest neighbors is J1, and then we add diagonals, and this diagonal exchange is J2, and this forms one of, so J1 is on horizontal and vertical links, and J2 is on diagonals. Okay, and this forms one of very popular and very well studied models. And so the phase diagram of this model, if I sketch it as a function of the ratio J2 to J1, so, okay, there is actually a single axis. We are at zero temperature, so. So when J2 is zero, we just have unfrustrated Neel ordering. Then if I consider the limit of J2 much greater than J1, then it's just another square lattice rotated, and it consists of two interpenetrating lattices. So if you consider large J2 limit, you have just rotated lattice. Okay, and so in that limit, the state is also classically ordered in what is sometimes called a fossa sublattice. Antiferromagnetic state. And in between, and so, okay, these are two limits, and classically in between, the transition between two happens at 1/2. But, okay, various numerous studies have shown that, okay, there is some window of...
Heisenberg.
Quantum spins on Heisenberg model. In two dimensions at zero temperature. And so, but in between, there is a disordered phase.
So, I'm missing, you might have said this, but there's no psi at the center of the
No, so the spins, right, okay, so so spins are only on the vertices of this square lattice, okay, and the crossings, right, okay. So this disordered phase, okay, some kind of disordered phase, okay, from various calculations, and so begin with spin waves and increasing sophistication. And
this is classical movement.
Quantum. Classically there is single line at 1/2. Okay, well, single point. Okay. Quantum mechanically, so for spin 1/2, there seems to be disordered phase, and there are strong arguments, although the question is not completely settled, that in this disordered phase one has spontaneous dimerization in which dimers are formed spontaneously. Symmetry, translational symmetry, is broken spontaneously in one of four possible patterns on square lattice, and so there is a doubling of the period, let's say, of this type. As I sketch, one have spontaneous formation of. Well, okay, so it's magnetically disordered in a sense that if we have such structure, then.
Singlet.
Yes, right, it's a singlet state with on site magnetization zero, but the order is, let's say, okay, non classical in a sense that I have two spin objects, singlets, okay, and if I pick up one, then I know location of all others in the system. So it's crystal, valence bond crystal, another way to describe it. So, but why I'm describing this? This is two-dimensional model. As I said, so the first, I mean, results on this valence bond crystal, I think appeared in a work of Ritten Sajdev in 91. And these are results of Lajan calculation in some where spins are replaced by Schwinger bosons essentially, and then the number of those bosons is extended to large number from physical number of two, and then in this large n limit one can do saddle point calculations and find this phase. Okay. And okay, so still not what we do, it's an introduction into this type of solutions.
Lachen is not the same as saying that you have spin not 1/2 but log.
No, it's some, if you want, unphysical degree of freedom, I mean, or at least one which has no direct simple physical interpretation. Lachen is not the same as Lach S.
Are there some simplifications in Lach S case?
Okay, in Lach S, for example, with various degrees of sophistication, you can get, you know, point where your on-site magnetization vanishes.
So you're
okay.
So is this disordered region?
Well, we see the end of ordered region.
Okay,
you go from classical phase, or almost classical, I mean the nil phase, say, and you apply increasing orders of one over S expansion, and in principle, okay, you can calculate, you're calculating corrections, but essentially the first one tells you approximately, and then spin waves will give you the number of the order, okay, on this axis, about 0.4 or so. Okay, what's beyond that point you don't know from spin waves, because okay, it's.
But do you see a finite instability in the scalar expansion? To start from an air phase and increase A2.
So to do spin waves, you choose ground state, one particular symmetry breaking pattern, right?
Yes. Then I increase J2.
Yes.
Then the middle phase is really a balance on crystals, and don't you expect to see some kind of soaking of the mode and some finite Q?
Not in spin waves. It's a different mode. Okay, so it's because all spin waves are looking for fluctuations of magnetization, right? And these are different variables. This is different new variable, okay?
And transition is always
full, so that
from this
time-less space. The question is, okay, By Landau, here it's first order. There were, as you know, arguments put forward a few years ago that this may be a deconfined critical point. Okay, the arguments are there. I think more careful studies show that it is first order, right? So, I mean, it's a open question, but it looks like, okay. Well, okay, so you always in finite, I mean, I cannot comment much on numerics, but it is consistent with first order, right? Now, of course, you know, deconfined critical point, if it exists, would be extremely interesting. How to see it numerically, I mean, there are, that's not what I can say much about. Sorry, there was a...
Yeah, I wonder whether you would see this instability in scattering between two string waves.
You can see it maybe as a properly set. Okay, so you can see it as a maybe bound state of spin waves appearing. Okay, but if it's first order, right? Okay, so, I mean, it can be, but then you know, it's first order under rigorous symmetry considerations. You take some approximation spin wave. Okay, it may show you as a soft transition, doesn't.
There was my question, if you go beyond the spirit theory where you can see that, but I agree, if it's a positive transition, it doesn't really.
If it's strongly first, I mean, yeah, you cannot say anything, right?
Can I ask a more fundamental question?
Yes.
In that case, you only have one point.
Yes.
And so then the range of the interval in the disorders. Proportional to
right. Okay, so if I add x is s, or better probably 1 over s, right? So then this is will be something like that. So that classically at s equal infinity, you have single point, and then the opens. But okay, my point, so is that this spontaneously dimerized phase that shows up was identified in this Lagrange calculation appeared in a very that I want to mention because it appeared as a result of fairly complicated calculation. Okay, it appears as condensation of of topological defects in the next after leading order of the calculation in Lagrange generalization of Schwinger boson model. Okay, so I mean it is really sophisticated. At the saddle point, there is no variation in strength of the bonds. There is no spontaneous symmetry breaking. One has to account for singular gauge for configurations, which condensations of which leads to such pattern. Okay, so it is a rather delicate and beautiful calculation, and then numerically, you know, people seen that in various exact diagonalization and Monte Carlo, I think some calculations. But then again, there are independent calculations based on variational wave functions, some of which do not support such a phase. Okay.
This calculation was made for limit s equal to
anything? No, that is was spin half, but then large another.
The charge is s equal to t.
So s equal to half is somewhere here.
I understand.
But then there is really another axis, n, which is. Along which these people did kind of expansion. And then one believes, essentially at that point, again, very well grounded, but still believe that as you reduce n from very large to 2, which corresponds to SU2 Heisenberg model, you know, that phase survives. Okay. Yes?
It seems that this diagonal function, for example,
you're asking why the pattern is like this?
Why this condition? I mean classically, I just compare the energy. As the value of y is 1/2 log 1. So if you come to the bond number.
Okay, so let's see. Okay. So you're saying so there are four bonds of J1 type and four of J2, and but you have to, okay, there is a simple counting which is, okay, let me see. So, just a moment. I don't believe it's one half, but okay, I wrote it out. Yeah. So this is two sub-bonds. No, no, okay, so it, okay, one half. Okay, I mean, you calculate energy for, sorry, I'm just trying to figure it out. Right, I mean per site, per site. Okay, you compare, one has to compare energy per site, and yes, right. Right. Okay, it's one half. Okay. So. Well, you compare energies. It's a first order, it's a disorder line. Yes, right. At that point, actually, all solutions with total spin of four spin placket equal to zero, they all are degenerate. They all have some energy. Classically.
In research, yes, if you don't include instantons, then what happens?
Oh, you'll have just featureless disordered phase. By featureless, I mean there is no variation.
Discover that there's a phase.
Oh, so you discover that there is a phase with no long-range magnetic order, but the nature of that phase at the n equal infinity level is not, I mean, is it's featureless disordered ground state, meaning that if you look on, it's spin liquid, or okay, it, in a sense, okay,
can I ask
spin correlation function, pair spin correlation function decays exponentially, that's all, yes.
Can I ask a trivial question? You know, what's the motivation of this? You know, what experimental system does this describe really?
Well, okay, I get to experimental systems, and of this particular type, okay, there are, okay, I won't quote the chemical composition right away, but there are materials which, okay, actually exist on the other half of the phase diagram, quasi-two-dimensional, and I just, sorry, something with lithium, but I don't remember the composition. All right. But so that's okay, in a sense. So, but okay, motivation is to consider one of the simplest models which have frustration in it, to understand how frustrations, that is.
Okay, triangular lattice would be one example.
That's another example, yes. And I will comment on triangular lattice as well.
To be more realistic about this kind.
This, it's different. Okay. So in this model, what is important, let me stress this point, it describes collinear spin fluctuations or spin correlations, either when in one of the classical phases or in a disordered, are collinear, okay, in a sense that wave number or momentum is commensurate, is some multiple of the lattice, okay, inverse lattice constant. So collinear spin correlations.
Commensurate,
yes, okay, and collinear. I really want collinear, meaning there is one axis when one breaks. If there is, in spaces where there is long-range order, you know, one picks up one single direction in spin space, okay? Triangular lattice would be another class of system in which the correlations are non-collinear. And this, in general, described by different theory, but can also be studied. And is studied extensively. But really, it's what I wanted to say, that, for example, such a spontaneously dimerized phase was seen in this and similar analytical calculations in various numerical calculations, but then again, some of the numerical studies which employed, one can say more biased, but I don't know, really just studies which employed various variational wave functions of Gutzwiller type do not support conclusion on the existence of this phase, okay? And so the question arises if one can approach this problem in a different way, at least, okay? Or this whole story motivates the approach, which is different. And so let me describe deformation of the model, which provides, in our view, such a motivation. And so I take same lattice, but I say that now I have reduced symmetry from essentially square lattice to one where I arbitrarily, to a degree, pick up a strong direction of exchange. So my spins still live on same sides, but now I say exchange along this x direction is the strongest coupling constant in the problem, and this coupling between chains, I introduce J-perp, and I introduce J-cross. So J-cross is just... And so it is a modification of the original problem, and so I want to be in the limit of J cross J curve being small. So I reduced lattice symmetry of the problem. But so the idea is to then treat this perturbation, these interactions between so formed strong chains as a perturbation, okay, and analyze two-dimensional problem or approach the two-dimensional problem as perturbed decoupled spin chains, and then if in this calculation we identify the leading instability, then that would be an argument in favor of that instability developing in a two-dimensional phase.
Can you just talk about J-perp and J-X?
Okay. J-perp are vertical along wide axis, and J-cross are diagonals.
Cross, not X.
Yes. Cross, or X, okay. Now, okay. Another motivation, okay, so it's to comment on studying this problem. So, again, we don't know material of precisely this type yet, okay. But one can, well, sooner or later one will appear, I'm sure. And then, people studied Kagome for long, and still study Kagome for a very long time, and extremely interesting problem. Materials appeared 2 years ago. Okay? Spin half antiferromagneton Kagome lattice. Okay, right. Okay, that was you took my point. But then in cold atoms, one presumably can engineer things like that, and then it's a totally different.
But so your aim is to see the
result of
kind of crystal, or?
Okay, my aim is to say something about spatial anisotropic model, okay, just to see what I will get as a for such model, okay, and then in generalized phase space I will know corner which is different from all other approaches, and then I will try looking on global phase diagram. My connection to existing phases.
But the hope is to get more phases in addition to the ones shown on the diagram, or just kind of confirm existence of these phases, even if theoretical reason to hold that maybe some other phase appears.
Well, okay, so this is still a frustrated model. So, I mean, you could expect spin liquids a priori in this model, and then this will be another way to look on them. I mean, no, the idea is not to confirm this phase. That's, I mean, just jumping ahead, we do see something like this appearing, but under under very controlled perturbative calculation. I mean, it's not, let me get to formulating this.
Can I ask, going back to the original model, G1, G2?
Yes.
It seems like you should have more than one valence bond crystal, because it could be J2 dominating, then you have it along the diagonals, and you have it.
Well, so, okay. So you're saying there might be another phase boundary inside.
Right. One is on the left side of the diagonal, and the other side is the diagonal.
I mean, at least, okay. In the minimal variant, it's a one phase that appears. Then there are always questions near sufficiently close to transition. There may be another phases.
Are you going to consider spin 1/2?
Spin 1/2. So let me say, okay, what we do. So we looking on problem of coupled spin chains. So Hamiltonian is sum of chain Hamiltonians, and chains, suppose I enumerate by y discrete coordinate, and there is a perturbation which I write as SXY, example J curve, SXY plus 1 plus J cos SX, X minus 1, Y plus 1, J cos SX plus 1. Okay, which means we pick up this site. It interacts with this spin across with J, strands J perp, and interacts with neighbors to the left and right with J cross. Okay. And if all of these couplings are weak, so then one can immediately see, or at least understand the structure and of feature of the phase diagram and where to look for interest in physics. So imagine that all these couplings are first set to zero. Okay. Then we just have completely decoupled chains, so there is nothing to... to worry about. But, of course, hugely degenerate ground state, just product of states of wave functions of independent chains. And what I know about chain is very important. So Heisenberg chain with exchange which we can set to 1, but so say nearest neighbor exchange is a critical system. That's what really the property we want to explore. It's a critical system in which spin correlations decay approximately as 1 over distance, approximately because there are logarithmic corrections to this, in this same system, a parameterization, which I'll write now as in the following way. The product of two spin, scalar product of two spin operators on neighboring sides, or energy density. And I consider such a four spin object. Two spins on link connecting xx plus 1, two spins on link connecting x prime plus 1. This correlation function, although it appears, okay, roughly the square of the first one, decays as first power of the distance. Okay, and this is very important observation, well known. It tells us that these variables only appear to be very different on lattice model. In the low energy limit, there is extended symmetry in the problem.
The upper chain should be somewhere on minus 1 to the x factor.
That's very good, yes.
But then there's always subleading contribution, which is not.
Sorry, it's anti-ferromagnetic, so spins are almost, I mean, the state is almost anti-ferromagnetic. So, the second one is also. Wait. It also lives on momentum pi. Yes.
First factor
is
minus
1,
the other factor is minus
1.
The other one is what? Each of them is minus 1. Why should alternate? Each of them is.
Just a moment.
Okay. Or it is A.
So, okay, what I'm really saying. What I'm saying. Yes. So what is really decaying as a power law is staggered component.
So the energy.
The energy is. Is a.
Yeah, I understand, but the correlation of energy is the same.
Yes. Yes. Right. Yes. There is no order, right? This is critical. I mean, both correlation functions decay with the same power law.
But since the epsilon has no side effect, the dimerization just think it defies.
Okay. So okay, imagine. Let me. What do we think about this? Factor. Imagine that you are in a state with non-zero dimerization. What does it mean? That there is average energy. I mean, there is energy, of course, and then one bond is weaker, another is stronger. You have to oscillate between bonds, and this factor describes that oscillation. It's staggered energy density in the state where such symmetry is broken, which is, okay, to get this state, one needs to modify Heisenberg chain somehow by including next nearest interactions. But once again, so the point here is that chain is critical. And in addition to staggered magnetization, this vector N, which is often also called Niel vector, which is just up-down corresponding to anti-ferromagnetic ordering, there is another variable, staggered dimerization, which dimerization, which is degenerate with a new vector. Okay, and the reason for that, I mean, it's not an accident. These two fields are components of SU2 matrix which is appears in proper series of spin half Heisenberg chain at low energies is what is called Wiese-Zumina Novikov-Witten model, and that model is written in terms of matrix SU2 matrix G, and it turns out that staggered dimerization and nil vector n are components of this matrix.
You're saying that's why?
That's why, okay, that's a formal way to say that's why they have, if they're okay, components, they have to go with the same power law. And another way to think about this extended symmetry is actually to implement, okay, is to write these operators or variables in terms of fermions. Okay. Okay, so in terms of fermions, I'll just sketch. I mean, it's okay. You can. There is one tricky point, one which one has to discuss, and then the result follows. Namely, if I attempt to write what these variables look like in terms of fermions, so.
But n magnitude of n is 1. Is it fixed to 1?
Well, the whole thing is fixed to 1. So let me think of my chain as actually fermion problem. That's sorry, once what?
Spin is SU2 and there's extra symmetry.
The matrix is
SU4.
Symmetry of what? Of the matrix?
No.
So N has three components. X, Y, Z.
Yeah, so there's a spin SU2.
Then
there's an extra symmetry between
epsilon and n. That's it, yes. In the low energy theory, yes.
It seems
we have
left
anyway. But
SU2
process. Oh, yes, okay. So, okay. Let me get it, yes.
Okay.
So, if we think of chain, a system of fermions. The extended symmetry is a cross product. There is symmetry at the Hamilton. Okay, let me just get to this point, otherwise I'll be jumping. So we have fermions from which Heisenberg model you can think as is obtained from Hubbard model at half filling. And in one dimension, so in principle, it appears in large U limit. In one dimension, we know that any at half filling, any for any U, the phase is described by Heisenberg model. Okay, so there is no transition in U. So I take then this and take advantage of that by saying, let me first turn off interactions completely.
Okay, so. Within
the chain. I think of chain for a moment about free fermions. Okay? As free fermions. In this, at half filling, so the only condition, so which is very important and which I have to preserve, that Fermi momentum is commensurate with like this. Okay. Pi over 2. Half filled chain. Okay. Half filled band. Okay. Now I have this right and left movers. Okay? And in terms of this, not yet, no. I'm just taking free ferments.
With,
just I'm going to write it down. I'm going to write it down. So what is new vector then? It's okay. It's a 2kF excitation of this spin exchange with spin flip of excitation. So I'll write it psi r s. It couples right and left Fermi points at every point I have. So I have fermions, free fermions. Free spin half fermions. Okay? And then, so that the fermion, if you want to write as KF, A is lattice constant, psi r plus minus ikf x psi left. That I decompose fermions into right and left movers.
You really think about Hubbard, not about Jordan-Wigner?
I'm thinking about Hubbard because it preserves spin rotational invariance. So I write and I say I'm thinking about Hubbard, but then I set Hubbard, if you want, to zero to understand what my variables mean. Okay. And so 2kF component of spin density, that's new vector. There is another very important variable in the problem which I didn't describe even yet. It's uniform magnetization or spin fluctuations at momentum zero, but I mean they're important for calculations, but their correlation function go as one over distance squared. Okay, and so they're subleading. Okay, they correspond. Okay, so I'm writing them. So I have right and left fermions, and so I have this right and left contributions to magnetizations, which correspond to momentum zero transfer. And these contributions are also often called spin currents. Okay. Yes?
Question. When you rewrite this Heisenberg chain in terms of fermions, doesn't the non-interacting situation correspond to XY chain and Jordan?
No. So these are physical fermions. These are not Jordan. That's Hubbard model at U equals zero, if you want, for the moment. So free fermions. Just half field free fermions, real fermions. These are not Jordan Wigner. They carry spin index. Jordan Wigner fermions do not carry spin index. Okay. Dimerization in this language is 2kF component of charge density. Up to a sign and eyes, which I think they go like this. So 2kF components, so right and left, and then okay, with there is I, so okay. So for non-interacting fermions, 2kF components of spin density and charge density are degenerate. Decay with the same power. Miracle happens when we turn on U, and that remains to be true.
This is true about some spectrum.
Yes, no, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, there are, you know, reasons are deep and can be formulated on various levels. But so, once again, think, so we know that, say, from various exact solutions when available and various, well, bosonization and such, of which this is just, you know, another way to present. But if I have non-interacting fermions in 1D and I turn on interaction, generically the state remains critical. So non-interacting fermions are describe critical system. I turn on interaction, system remains critical, various exponents change in that's what generally called Luttinger liquid. And this N and epsilon spin 2kF spin density and 2kF charge density fields of course in general change, but they're tied to each other in interacting theory in the same way as they're tied in non-interacting. The only, of course, I mean, it's not, of course, the full story in a sense that if you ask me to calculate the relation function of, say, these nil vectors of 2kF components of density using free fermions, I will never get 1 over x. I will get 1 over x squared because Green's function of free fermions in 1D goes as 1 over distance. I essentially have a convolution of two Green functions. It goes as 1 over distance squared. So from here to here, there is a tricky point which we understand, not very, I mean, was understood very well long ago, is that if one then on top of this representation does, for example, bosonization is one possible way, one sees that Hamiltonian of interacting fermions in 1D consists of charge and spin parts which decouple. I mean, on leading, I mean, they're independent degrees of freedom. Charge and spin density, charge and spin fluctuations are independent. And so, although it's not apparent in this representation when one does bosonization, one sees that, so to say, half of degrees of freedom here of charge type and other half of spin type. Okay, if you take this into account when you calculate spin correlation function, you'll get exactly 1/2, because at half filling charge sector is gapped. It's a Mott insulator in one dimension. Okay, so if way to think about it, you have Hamiltonian, so let me okay. H fermions is equal to sum of charge and spin, and that's okay, always true. At half filling, charge sector acquires gap. This is non-perturbative effect, I mean it's but if at low energies I cross it out as I shoot for half field, then I see correspondence between fermions and spins. But I always have to make sure that when I calculate various correlation functions, I do not by mistake account for charge fields which should be, you know, frozen out. Yes, sometimes.
I get it confused.
Yes.
So here you're saying that the epsilon field here represents the charge density.
Yes, 2kF component of charge.
Okay.
Of charge flux.
How's that related to the epsilon on the left hand side there?
That's the same epsilon.
It's the same epsilon.
So minus 1 to x is.
If this guy's gapped, then the correlation should be exponential.
This has, so now, this, every variable written here is a product of charge and spin bosons in bosonization formulation, which is not written here. It's okay. So I bosonize these fermions.
What does that, the parents mean? Either?
No, the parents just describe these fields. But I'm saying this fermion, you know, I can write for each of these fermions. I can say that it's up to convention, but something like pi in terms of bosonic fields. In terms of bosonic fields.
Could you explain again why this epsilon and that epsilon are the same staggered dimerization?
Okay, so it's a scalar. Leaves at 2kF. Leads at 2kF, which is pi in this. KF is pi.
So if I, instead of that epsilon, I would use epsilon with right, right, and left, left, that would be the one which is gapped. Right? There's something else which is fully charged, which is right, right, plus left, left in the formula for epsilon. That thing would be gapped, but the epsilon is not gapped.
What do I do? So if I take product of right fermions, sum of a spin, that will be density, charge density. Density is gapped. It's not. That's 2kF. I mean, I'm not writing the full. I'm writing what I need, which is pi component. Was it? So it's this pi thing is very important. So if you want construct, okay, another way to think of this, okay.
Is that true that only in the free fermion limits that epsilon is...
No, it's not, no, okay. So...
When you turn on the interaction, that's not purely charge density, but includes...
Yes, of course, well, so...
What he's saying is that charge degree of freedom...
Charge degrees of freedom...
So epsilon becomes
yes. Okay, let me write. I mean
so what does it mean by parents is charge density?
Okay, let me write. Okay, so that we I didn't want to write any Bosonization expressions because we do not really require them. But okay, for clarification. So in the basis, normalizations which we use, so this thing becomes, okay, it's a vector, so each component of the vector multiplied by charge fields phi rho, cosine of phi rho, okay, and then there is vector, something like cosine of theta sigma, sine theta sigma, sine phi sigma. So these are spin bosons. This is charge boson. I mean, this is, okay, just doing bosonization, okay. Then for epsilon, one gets the same. Okay, on this level, I shouldn't write square root of 2 pi, I just write phi rho. And here I write phi rho.
That's the phi rho.
Yes, and then this is multiplied by cosine phi sigma. This is a different field in, it's, okay. So, but I need to clean that. So it's a different field, and now when at half filling, and half filling is reflected in the value of Fermi momentum, when I turn on interaction, this charge cosine of charge field acquires expectation value. And so that's what I meant when I said it freezes out. And then what remains are spin components, spin fields, spin bosons only. And okay, they're described in terms of two bosonic fields, theta and phi, and these three components of N and dimerization represent various independent functions of those fields.
And that's responsible for why you have a square root.
Yes, why I have one over distance decay. And so for free fermions, the charge will give another power of one over distance. With interactions, it will give some non-universal power. Okay, but I am avoiding charges altogether by saying no matter how small interaction is, charge gap opens. And then I assume that it's such, and so I'm working at energies below the charge gap. Okay. What should I do? So that is all only. So what this does, I described what I need from all of this discussion, low energy degrees of freedom of spin chain, and I just wanted to make a point that these low energy degrees of freedom are not exhausted by antiferromagnetic Neel vectors. There is another extremely important variable degenerate with it, which is this staggered dimerization.
What does M become?
M is a spin current, and one can write, and it's okay. It doesn't actually couple to charge because you see now the extended symmetry of the problem, at least glimpse of it. So there is independent symmetry on these two points because you can multiply, say, psi r by some phase factor and psi left by independent phase factor. This, for this variable m, it doesn't matter. It's psi dagger at the same, species. So it's a spin current, and even though it appears to involve charge field, it does not. And if you properly bosonize it, you get some, vector long expression, which doesn't involve charge fields at all. It's made of phi and theta conjugated fields of bosonic theory for spin variables, for spin bosons only. Okay? And this will be important, but for now, let's just.
What does it mean?
Yes. Yes. It's with Zuminowitten level 1. If you want, SU2 model. Level 1 means that there is a. These are Pauli matrices. One can have other matrices.
So in the spin correlation, there's also actually logarithm.
Yes.
Is it important?
It will become, it depends on the model. So on triangular lattice, it does become very important, as we found recently. But the log, so to be very careful, here I have log x square root. Here I have 1 over log x to power 3 halves. This comes from interaction between spin densities at right and left Fermi points, and it's called, it's marginally irrelevant perturbation called backscattering, spin backscattering. But it will, it's a fine point on the level of these variables. I mean, it doesn't spoil this classification because such a perturbation is a marginally irrelevant. So let me just state what happens when we couple chains, and then I just essentially describe the answer because.
So this is a special property, this extended symmetry, is a special
yes.
property. As long as you're within this Heisenberg.
Well, it's a special property of. So essentially, if you want to interact in fermions, because as long as you preserve symmetry, yes, you have. Spin rotational symmetry. So as long as interaction between fermions doesn't. Very interesting.
That's at the level of fermions. But what is it about the spin chain? I mean, why look at the spin chain just as a C2?
Well, okay, so the spin chain in general you can consider XYZ chain, right? I mean, anisotropic with interactions.
Isotropic. So you have an
S2
symmetry.
Yes, okay.
I think his question is why C2 becomes a C2 cross a C2?
But if I look at the spin chain.
Because right and left movers decouple.
Just purely
come. How important is from that you have a pseudo symmetry? If I actually take XXZ.
So then it depends.
For the result, I mean.
So these fields are degenerate only in the Heisenberg point. If you reduce symmetry, so XXZ, as you said, right, I think. So one way to think about it, for example, so I add some term, nz squared, to the problem, right? So that depending on sign, I either want spins to line up along z direction or being orthogonal to that, right? In this way, I break the symmetry, and then different components of this field will have different. If I remain in the critical phase, if you deform the symmetry so that plane spins are aligned in XY plane, that it will become XXZ chain, and correlations of in-plane and out-of-plane components will follow different power laws, and then you break the symmetry.
Yeah, I understand that you break the symmetry, yes. But
so it will be important in a sense, so there will be no exact degeneracy, and then it depends. Okay, in calculations that we do, this.
But I understand that, eventually when you couple these chains together, you get this dimerized chain or whatever you call it, dimerized plane. So if you take anisotropic chains to begin with, we will still get this...
Depends on how anisotropic, depends on precise nature. Yes, because exponents describing this anisotropy will come into calculation. Okay.
I'm trying to understand, I mean, if you do FT2 rotation at the same point, right and left, that corresponds to... That's the original FT2 of the spin chain?
Well, that's original fermion, right? If you rotate, when you rotate...
No, so what happens to that? So
N is rotated.
N and epsilon, that...
N is a vector, epsilon is a scalar, right?
But that... I can think of them as a four-component vector?
So they are... So epsilon is trace of G... N is trace of sigma G, right? Okay. Yes. G is this is U2 matrix of. Well, that's what I'm. But that would be. Okay. So this extended symmetry, I thought you're asking what corresponds to original spin. Rotation of original spin, because then you rotate. Right, and it's a subgroup of that extended symmetry which you described, because you rotate physical fermions when you do spin rotation, original spin rotation. But the Hamiltonian of the problem. So, is in this language, in the language of fermions, is just a sum, okay, of right, left. Well, so there is some velocity, fermion velocity. Left minus, dx phi L minus psi right IV dx psi right. Okay, that's Hamiltonian for this problem, and then to it I can add interactions. And so when I add interactions, I'd have feeling. In particular, interaction, say Hubbard, leads to Umklapp scattering in which pair of fermions, say, scatters from right point to left and vice versa, and this Umklapp scattering corresponds to gapping out charge degrees, describes gapping out of charge degrees of freedom. Okay.
But still preserves the left, independent left and right.
Yes. Because you gap only half of, spin, of degrees of freedom charge. Spin ones remain critical. So they remain critical, and so that's in terms of those spin degrees of freedom, low energy degrees of freedom, then we write this expression that at low energies, can be parameterized as a sum of spin fluctuations at q equals 0, sum of spin currents, plus fluctuations at pi, which is just 2kF spin density. And on the level, so epsilon is a product of spin, so it doesn't show up explicitly. So let us now take sketch this step very quickly. But so interchain interaction written here. So what we do, we just plug in this parameterization. Okay, what will come out? I will. There will be the sum over y. We take continuum limit along chain direction x. What happens then? I just give the answer, and you can check that it's so. For uniform components of spins, it that is q equals zero component. You just add. It doesn't matter. what is I mean, it's a total interaction. So I'm taking continuum length 4. It's a staggered component, so nil vectors. So all variables are assumed to be are variables of x as a function, and y, the chain index, is a discrete index. Okay. So, okay, we'll get this. Now, if you look on correlation functions, we know m.m decays as 1 over x squared. It's a, okay, whereas n.n decays, n are more relevant fields in a sense of RG than this m. M is a marginal field. And so this allows us to draw very simple, make very simple observation, so that if I have, you know, if I, my J, curb JX cross J cross, got myself, plane, so there is a line on which interaction of nil vectors between neighboring chains cancels out. That is a line J perp equal to J cross. Okay. This is a line correspond which corresponds to that point, I mean, one half point in a classical consideration with which I started. Okay. So the factor of 2 is comes in because there are of the unit cell consideration. So to the left of this line, we have, so let me redraw here so to I now exploit. It's okay, M by itself, it depends on, okay, M by itself is marginal, it's conserved spin current. But then it's exactly M, yes, it's okay, right. So,
yeah, the M-M couple.
But, I mean, but there is this additional marginally relevant term in every chain, which I didn't write out yet, okay, which will slightly can affect things, but not on this level, okay? So, what do we have? So, if this sign is positive, we can think of chains which have now nil vector, since I have taken up-down oscillations out, I mean, it's a slow variable, right? And so if this is positive, I minimize the energy just having ends pointing in opposite directions. And this is another way to represent a nil phase of the classical model. So that's when it's positive, I just minimize the energy, okay? I have spins. If this variable is negative, I just line up and all ends along some axis, right? And so that corresponds to Fossa Blattice phase, which I in classical. Okay. And so here we have this line again. But now we can ask. From
why is the point in the same direction?
It's vector n.
Only the name, okay, it's already.
This is n. Yes, yes. I have taken staggered part out. Yes. And okay, so I should. It's written here. S is m plus minus 1. So, okay. So these are two classical phases, but now we can ask, you know, so there is this line, and everything seems to be fine. And we observe that if I fine-tune this to that line, okay, this coupling drops out, I have m dot m coupling, which is marginal. That's starting point of the consideration done by Nirsesyan and Tsvelik several years back, who did careful analysis of this problem at exactly that line and concluded that this m dot m interaction doesn't lead to magnetic instabilities. It's marginal, and they did it, you know, very careful job studying it. And so they concluded that on that line, system should be thought of as a actually resonating valence, but as a liquid, spin liquid. They had more sophisticated argument than the one I gave, but that's the essence. Okay. So. Well, so the statement is not true. Okay, so, but I mean, I'm just. And so at this point, we can step back and look and ask several questions. And first of all is the question, does this Hamiltonian H prime interchain account for all possible instabilities in the problem? Or account for all degrees of freedom? Or accounts for all terms that are allowed by lattice symmetry of the original problem. And it does not, and it does not for exactly the reason that most general form, since I know my decoupled chains have two degenerate fields, n and epsilon, so generally I should, if the symmetry allows, include term which is interaction of dimerizations on chains. And then we ask, are there any reasons for such term not to be generated in the problem? Okay, so for example, and okay, in that particular problem there is no such reason, so let me draw the lattice again. And so, symbolic way, way to picture this interaction, I have epsilon field on one chain, product of two spins, it interacts with product of two spins on neighboring chains, okay? If I allow such interaction, okay, uniformly throughout the lattice, it respects symmetries of the lattice. I can reflect like this, I can reflect along this chain, I can reflect it along the middle point, I can do rotations, all which is the same almost by 180 degrees, so that's a present. The fact that it... Well, okay, if present, it's relevant because it's degenerate is M-field, okay? So what can and does happen, as we observe in our calculations, that at the point where fine-tuned to the region, initially line, but where interaction of staggered magnetizations disappears, okay, quantum fluctuations generate interaction of staggered dimerizations, okay, and so since it's late, I will just give the answer. What we find is that properly treating these interactions, the line splits into a finite region. And in this finite region, okay, the ground state is spontaneously dimerized. And the coupling, okay, so now B is of the order J perp squared over J. J perp or J cross doesn't matter, it's the same thing on that level.
How do you derive this annualization?
Okay, that will take me, well, within 10 minutes, if it's okay, so that's the statement of our result. So this term also receives correction. So there is some A term, and A is of the order of B, but not identical. Okay, so the line, first of all, is not exactly a J. Classical disorder line. I mean, there is no symmetry forcing it to be at this value. Okay, there are corrections. And then, but much more importantly, you also generate this. So, okay, how we do this?
So, if again, you break your pseudo symmetry, then as far as I understand, what you are saying is that this n times n terms, well, you will not be able to kill it by just tuning a single parameter, right?
Yes. So the space is consists. So yeah, I mean, very simply. Yes, I mean, the essence, the Hamiltonian, leading terms of the Hamiltonian. Let me write some. Allowed by the symmetry of the problem are this. Okay. And so, okay, the question then is if there is some, say, one could think of some, or imagine some extended symmetry where you can simultaneously nullify A and B. Okay, we are saying there is no such symmetry in the problem. You can fine-tune one to zero, then another is finite, and since relevant describes this order, you can fine-tune that to zero, and then the other one.
Okay, so SU2 is not needed.
Okay, so
the same is true for anisotropic exchange within the single chain, right?
This field remain. I mean, things will change in a sense that I will, as I show, the way to arrive at this result, we use algebra formed by this, and this algebra, okay, operator product expansion algebra. I mean, and this relies on a C2. It can be generalized to XXZ. It will be different in a sense that at some point, I mean, this. So as you reduce symmetry from a C2, epsilon field becomes less relevant, okay? And so there will be a point where it will not produce dimerized phase just because it's not relevant enough.
I see.
By reducing symmetry, you change scaling dimensions of fields. And well, presuming that nothing else happens and something will. Yes, no, it is. I mean, I'm not saying it. I mean, I didn't. It is important.
You can say that it is similar, but probably not. You cannot say anything about the order.
Sorry, in which case?
If this term is dominant, for example.
This one?
This B, yeah.
Yes, okay.
It is clear that this is simplest.
Yes, it is.
But I don't see why it cannot be liquid simplest, for example.
Oh, okay. So, well, okay. Because, okay, several. Okay, we arrive at this interaction, right? Now, so there are several. We don't have exact results, so we cannot solve two-dimensional problem. This summed over y, right? We can start, and we did start by considering just two coupled chains, okay, the ladder, frustrated ladder. Okay, in this way we can solve everything essentially exactly by refermionizing, and we
at the same x.
Yes. So I mean that's okay. X. Yes. So. Yes. Okay. So you. Yes. Okay. So we. But. So for the ladder, we know such a term breaks translational symmetry, and we simply expect it to hold in, because it's discrete symmetry. I mean, it's not continuous in the lattice as well. And.
This term is generated in the second approximation. Yeah. Or J for VDQ.
Yes.
And it's still very local in the X. I don't understand why. Because you have a diagonal interaction.
It's what we are writing is the most. So, I mean, you can.
You can write down
high. I can write, I mean, some function, but I mean, the whole thing has to be of dimension one, so I will, if I add some function of x, I will make those, less relevant. So you can think of it in terms of gradient expansion. We generate coupling at xx prime, but the leading term is at inside in x. Yes?
This time of computation, why is it supposed to be a column?
Oh, columnar, okay, it's determined, depends on a sign, okay, which is, happens to be negative. Sorry.
Suppose it's a dimer.
Yes.
Plus the constant. It seems that it's
an G2C as a. Yeah. Well, no. I mean, so okay. There is as to the sign of the B term. Okay. There is no. Okay. I personally don't have much intuition. I mean, you calculate, we get negative result, meaning it lines up in collinear way, if we were to get positive result, which happens in other models, not in this one. We have an example. Then it will correspond to such thing. I mean, the staggered arrangement.
Yeah, the time model is
the yes, right.
Yeah,
I'm saying, so if I take, you know, more general couplings, I can get another, I mean, certainly change sign. So there is nothing universal about this negative sign. I mean, it's a feature of lattice model. Follows, I mean, ultimately from the lattice model.
When you say you want to derive, I mean, in some sense, you need to write that in all terms of the...
Yeah, well, okay, so...
But you're saying when deriving a little b, you mean starting going back to the original microscopic spin.
Yes,
model.
Yes.
That's what you mean.
Well, okay, so what we do is almost... written, but so let me. So the point is, first of all, that what one obtains at the bare level of the series, that is just by plugging in continuum parameterization of spin fields into the lattice, original lattice model, which is written here, you know, there is no rule that it has to exhaust all possible couplings. Often it does, but okay, doesn't have to be. So then by symmetry, we see that, and there is another possible term, epsilon epsilon, okay? And which is not present, but so, you know, so now we are thinking of this problem in terms of RG scale. So when we plug this parameterization into lattice model, that's our original, I don't know, L equals zero point of RG. So, and at that point, original B, so let me just, L parameterizes RG scale, and when it's zero, it sit on the lattice scale. So, this B is zero, okay? Happens to be. And it will be zero in every microscopic model which only involves S dot S couplings because it is for spin combination.
Should we assume that M is in a way much smaller than M?
Yes, because it decays much faster. The correlation function of M along the chain decays, I mean, a square of correlation function of n fields. Yes.
But if you consider, to say, the fluctuation of m on a side,
yes.
Is it the same order of magnitude as m or n?
You mean in time?
Yeah. Okay. No, well, fluctuation, m square average.
It's zero.
On the side. Is it the same order of magnitude as m square? Or
is no, it's smaller. But because, so I take...
What is
it? It's all correlation functions are power laws. I mean, it's critical system. There is no scale. But they decay with different as different powers. And so n and epsilon are the slowest decaying ones. And all other decay faster. And m is one of them. It's...
Now, imagine that we are exactly on the line where this term with n is
n. Yes.
And I accept your point of view that m is much smaller than n and
yes.
Also much smaller than x.
Yes. Right? Yes, it is, right.
But on the other hand, b is much smaller than j.
Yes.
Perpendicular plus
to
J.
Right.
Therefore, maybe M is
more important. The full problem is delicate. I mean, so first what we do, okay, that we are saying in strictly in a, you know, J to, sorry, interchange J's to zero limit, okay, we only keep most relevant terms. And then we find what happens, and then we add this on top and see whether it's stable or not. Okay? But
they both are relevant.
No, M is marginal. So
M is marginal.
M is marginal. That's very important.
Epsilon is probably relevant.
Yes.
Also
no, it is relevant, otherwise it wouldn't be point to keep us. So epsilon, so these are two relevant terms. Okay. So strictly in the limit of interchain couplings going to zero, we are completely, we know our ground state chains, we know everything, so it's completely rigorous procedure. Then you can say for J perp or J cross any of them, 0.2 is your approximation. How good is your approximation? We cannot say from our calculation, it's an asymptotic calculation. But in the J to zero limit, this is rigorously can consider it as subleading.
Okay. Why does the effective ranking not be used to look at the transition? So you say
the transition because so we use it
from this state to this
right. Time. So because this transition, so these are two dimensional phases. To describe transition we need to be at the two-dimensional critical point and analyze it. We identify in phases as instability of quasi-one-dimensional theory. But once you got there, you have to think of the two-dimensional problem. There is no weak coupling anymore. In weak coupling in that sense. Depends on... So in the ladder, even in the ladder where we can solve it exactly, it depends on this marginally relevant backscattering term, which I keep mentioning but didn't write. And so one of the transitions is Eysenck-like, and another is either first order or I forgot some C2 transition, which I forgot classification. Oh, I can check.
In these two cases, there's no longer the order.
Sorry?
It's not
ordered
either. So,
these two. Right, this one is allowed in the ladder. But let me just sketch what happens,
question?
Yes.
But in general, we generate this term with B actually, depending on the x, that's fine.
Yes, I can.
So how do you get rid of that?
Well, we do gradient expansion. We keep the leading one. You assume that fields vary smoothly as always. So if you get xx prime, you expand. That's the leading term of the expansion. And there are higher order terms which are less relevant. But if you have the most relevant one finite, then the higher order terms again can be. Yes.
From beginning with spin, then probably
going to
chain, and then maybe from the band structure, then from the velocity of this two band, not the
from the vector. So, but so what you're saying, there is an order of limits, right? So here I'm saying interchain interactions are perturbation. If you thinking of Hubbard model, I can say I first diagonalize free part, and if you include hopping between chains, it's a different limit. You can do that, but it's a different limit. In large U, then, because in 2D, you really need... In 1D, we know any at half filling arbitrary small u gives you insulator, mod insulator. You're saying that in such a limit one gets
us.
Right, okay. But that's different. Okay, that yes. I mean, so you allow for charge fluctuations essentially, and then, right? No, but then, yes. Yeah, okay. Okay. It's an insulating state, which it's a different point, and I mean, somewhere they should meet, but I mean, it's one is not directly related to another. These are different limits.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
In your paper, you have three critical points.
Do I have? Well, not in this. Okay, not with these variables. Okay, so and as actually we'll see. So if you add, okay, what do I need? Well, I need something which you know, so that I have four spin coupling in the problem, so that I added so that to make total term of. Total coefficient, sorry, of such a term zero. Okay, so then if I add such an axis somewhere here, there will be I can tune, but actually we find the way, from way we derive it. I mean, it's clear that one actually needs infinite number of parameters to be fine tuned to get to that point, because the way these terms come in to contribute to the action is determined by derivative terms, which we have to include to generate all the allowed symmetry relevant terms. Okay, so and you can fine tune your interaction so that you kill, say, leading derivative term, but then there will be next one, and you have to keep doing it, and so there is infinite number of parameters to fine tune. So let me say that the way we, and I have to clean this a little bit. So what happens is that we have these two lines. So we're saying this one is allowed by symmetry, but you know, we don't yet know how to derive it. But since, okay, first of all, since it's allowed by symmetry, okay, it should be there. And let me on the same then level just write this term as a small a. Okay, so small a includes the bare coupling, but then there will be something else. Okay, so I mean, it's not most general form. Okay. And the way we approach the problem, so we say, okay, fine, let us sit on this line. Then, if I sit on the line, so I put a zero, can be initial value, okay, this is zero, b zero is zero, so I have just m dot m couplings, okay? But, okay, there are certainly less relevant terms in the problem, and let us just look on what those are. So, at this on this line, if we write the interchain interaction on the lattice level, can be rewritten in the following way. I just write it because it's very suggestive of what is to happen. So on this line, J curve equals to 2J cross. Interaction can be written as a product of spin pairs on adjacent chains. So I have my chains, and I have two spins in one, y plus one. I add them up here. I have two spins here, take the scalar product. I mean, that's the symmetry of that particular point. Okay. But so why it's convenient to write this way, if I plug in parameterization for each spin that it's uniform magnetization plus staggered magnetization, then since I will get... That's the same interaction, I just sit on this particular line, dashed line here.
And understand, but plus some other terms that...
No, just exactly that. On the lattice level, that's exactly what it is. I fine-tune to this point, to this line, okay?
So you shut off A and B.
Yeah, A and B are originally zero. On that line, B is originally zero, A is zero on that line, that's all. I'm fine-tuned to this point to see what, when I'm exactly on the line, if there are any interactions that can, spoil my nice criticality. That's all. And then if I understand them, I can go away from that line. Okay. But so, very simple observation. S plus, spin at site 1 plus spin on at site 2 in the Heisenberg chain is approximately double magnetization plus there is some sign, okay, which is nothing but derivative of staggered magnetization. I thought you pointed to lattice expression.
This is basically the alpha summation.
Yes. So for this pair is replaced by such contentation. Oops. Okay. So when I write m dot m, I'm simply neglecting these guys because it's derivative and n field has dimension 1/2. So this thing is 3/2, so when I take the product, it will be 3. Okay, but nonetheless, I'll write some coupling lambda which is proportional to J-terp, and it will be dx ny, dx ny plus 1. Plus high order terms. Okay. And so, if there is nothing else, that's really the theory I should be working. So the question now becomes, A and B are zero, so I remove them. What happens to such a theory when I do RG or perturbation theory? Okay. Whether it's stable or not. So if I find that lambda goes to zero and that's it, so I'm back then, okay, it must be critical state of some kind. Okay? But, so we do perturbation theory on this model. Okay? And, okay, you get second, so the first non-trivial order is second order, you have this squared, nice and interesting, this squared. So by the way, from this squared you get a something which is, just slightly reformulated Kostelitz-Tauli's RG flow, but then so perturbations here important in these couplings, and I am on the line when they are equal, and lambda is of the order of proportional to J curve. Some coefficients there. Okay. So we do perturbation in these couplings. Okay, that's what I want to say. And we get term. So symbolically, I'm just expanding the exponential perturbation theory. So I'll get to this point very quickly. And so there is time now, we wrote action and like that, but here is a important, finally, technical ingredient. So I have second order perturbation, so it's a cross term, okay? And, okay, we have M and derivative of N field on one chain and similar product on the other. Okay. And okay, so in general, double integral, and it's all about x over tau, right? And okay, so there is summation, but so I choose terms when they have, they sit on the same pair of chains. Otherwise, the other terms are not important. Okay. So chain index is fixed. Okay, one. Okay, and so now we do what is called fusion. So we assume we can consider point x tau and x prime tau prime sufficiently close to each other. So we extract the leading operator out of that one. Okay. And okay, here comes another miracle of that problem. Let me write it here. So M is a sum of right and left current. So for example, let me write right. Okay, A. A is a x, y, or z, the vector vector component. And so say I have xl, and then I have nb. So they're in the same chain. I'm not writing chain index anymore. Say at 0.00, so it has a meaning of relative gradient. Okay. And so this
operator. Left and right. M is left, right.
Yes, I mean, so M is a sum of spin currents at right point and left point. So I'm writing one of them. I mean, and the same can be done for left. They're just sum. Okay. And so the point is, and so the way this is calculated, okay, it's a key technical ingredient, and it's calculated very simply by using this fermion representation. Well, I mean, there are many. One can do bosonization as well, but okay. So what one finds, A, B, C, okay, I mean the rotation.
You're saying you can use that,
yes,
using free fermion?
Yes. Okay. I'll give the reason why in a moment. Yes.
I mean, M being raised is symmetry, so
yes.
It's probably ask you to figure
it. Yes.
Well,
I thought yes, but
the level of
this. Well, tau V, okay. Velocity, which okay, is 1, let's say, tau, okay, yes. Yeah, epsilon part is non-trivial. So they are different points. So if you think of rotation of a vector, I mean, they're not, you rotate about the point which is not where your vector is. You generate some diagonal component if you want to think about this way. That's the, yes. Oh, no, I mean, this is only without derivative yet. I mean, derivative we'll put in. No, it's, I mean, you can. So let me, we have this, okay? Then we have similar expression for left. You get whatever it is for the full thing. Then derivatives, okay. So derivative, okay. The leading term will be obtained, leading in terms of RG, in terms of operator involved, when derivative acts on C functions, okay. And so what I wanted to say is that, first of all, this is Green's function of right moving fermions. You take this derivative, and you see that integral that you get, I mean, which you have still to perform over the relative space and time, is convergent. And so instead of doing it in slices, in the energy sense, you can as well integrate over the whole thing.
You should take the average of that.
Yeah. So, okay. So what I'm... So you get very similar expression, but with Green's function of left fermions, okay? You then differentiate, multiply, do all this. So in this way, you're extracting leading operators, yes?
When you apply a big theorem, yes. You
put the average. Yes, so I mean, so, right. So this is valid, of course, only for...
written like algebra.
Yes, it is. So now, what do we mean? We mean, when we start out, that we'll do RG in a sense we integrate short distances, okay? So this expansion is only valid for the terms when these points, you know, happen to be within this close, okay? We obtain the expression, and it's very easy to see. So you have, you know, you have, first of all, because these are of, holomorphic, anti-holomorphic functions, you need to, you know, form absolute values, otherwise the integrals will give zero. Okay, well, let's plug that in. And you'll have, okay, wait. You have, okay. Let me, so I'm writing as follows. So, yes, right, yes. So I'll have, okay. So I switch to relative and center of mass, okay. Well, I keep writing. So, okay, these are okay. Add, okay. Let me be evaluated at the center of mass, okay. So that's just I wrote left. Then there is similar piece with right contribution. One can add them, okay, but I mean they, because of different denominators, well, there are slight differences, I mean, which are important. Okay, that's on chain Y, center of mass, similar product on chain Y plus one. And so taking derivative, so one, we differentiating once again, the leading operators are given, well, I don't differentiate operators, I differentiate, okay. And so, first of all, the things you can see right away, I believe, is that, and okay, so the only difference is that they are on different chains, but that's important. Let me write it out. Finally, so we have, okay, Y plus one, okay.
B prime, C prime.
B, C, yes, no, just a moment. So no, so this are, oh, C, right, C primes, yes, C primes, yeah.
B prime.
No.
Oh,
B is the same. Yes, B is the same. And so, okay. So, first of all, okay. It's more or less clear that we do get n dot n out of this on different chains, this coefficient, which, okay, we need to take derivatives and multiply, but so here you have minus I, I mean, say, essentially z in denominator, multiplied by one which has z bar. So that to form absolute, right? The resultant integrals are convergent. So in here, we should, okay, we started out so that we want to integrate between A prime and A, right? But we see the integrals are convergent, we extend this integration to. Well, A prime is A1 plus small change. I mean, the RG thing, the step. But it's, okay, the point is that it's not really required. I mean, that's a, but so we get this sum A, we get in a similar way B, and the cross terms between them do not appear as a result of all properties of epsilon symbols and such.
You can probably look at the original lattice model and just do perturbation theory.
Well, I mean, that's,
I know, but not doing it at the level of the field theory.
No. So, okay, so the point is here, what, I mean, the steps are, we're doing gradient expansion, we're identifying low energy degrees of freedom on just lattice. If I give you spin, I mean, okay, in principle, yes, I don't know how to do it. You have to say something about spin's Green's function in some way, and, okay. But, I mean, point here is, so, okay, and I, we'll just quote coefficient, I mean, since we've gotten. So, just a moment, right? So the resultant coefficient A, right, because I, is, so that's a bare one, and then we have, okay, okay, and we get the numbers, but okay. What is important is the scale. And then, okay, so okay, point is not okay, is that we started on that line and we think the line is critical. We sit on the line, do perturbation theory, and we generate two relevant terms. Okay, from high gradient terms. And it clearly tells us that this is not a critical line. It only appears to be so in the naive limit of the theory. And so, okay, I write. And what happens in perturbation theory, we generate these two terms. And okay, so now there will be other less relevant terms, but I'm not writing them. Okay.